Hello, and welcome to another episode of your favorite podcast, Bitches on Comics. How do I know it's your favorite? I don't know, because I'm a witch. So, welcome. Tis the season. What month is it? Who knows? It's October. It is the season for witches, and here we are. Which brings me... I hate myself for that pun, but I also love myself. Which brings me to our other host, a real witch, and one of my favorite bitches.
Your favorite Monica Estrella.
I'm sorry, my favorite ever bitch. I'm sorry, let me rephrase. My favorite bitch of all time, Monica Estrella Negra.
Can I get that down in writing?
Done. I'll send it to your people. We can sign it later today.
Excellent. Hello, everybody. Yes, it is October. I can't believe it's October, but it's October. Oh, hi, I'm Monica Estrella Negra. And today we have an amazing episode because we have Lambda Literary, Eisner, Ignatz, British Fantasy Award-winning comic creator and author of many comics, including A Guest in the House, Through the Woods, When I Arrived at the Castle, which is in a stunning new foil accented cover from Silver Sprocket, E.M. Carroll. How are you doing?
Hi, thank you for having me.
Happy Halloween. How's it going so far for you today?
Good. Yeah, classic fall day. I just consider all of October and part of September Halloween, so I've just been coasting on Halloween for a couple weeks now.
Honestly, it goes like summer and then it's like spooky season. And then after the 31st, it's just kind of like the void for me.
Yeah, until summer.
I feel like November does have some spooky feelings. I feel like it's like, you know, a lot of people like a certain holiday that shall not be named on this podcast, at least not today. However, you know, it's a real piece of shit holiday. So that's spooky too, right? Like it's a little spooky. You feel like, am I the zombie or are you the zombies? I'm sorry. This is what I have to add today.
I guess there's some residual fall stuff.
Yeah.
People keep their Halloween decorations up.
Yeah. Right. I like the goths who just are like, all year round is Halloween. I'm like, correct.
No, literally, I keep my Halloween decorations up year. So.
There's a few people around here who have just skeletons year round.
Why not? And plus, like, fall here in Minneapolis is like all the leaves fall, and then it's just like snow dungeon for like.
Oh, same here. Yeah, exactly. Also, there's a lot of Christmas horror stuff, so you can kind of dip back in.
This is so true. Black Christmas.
Winter is scary.
One of the best. The Abominable Snowman.
Very scary. Yeah. Very scary. I love this. Okay. New idea for the podcast. We just brainstorm what makes every month still count as spooky season.
Yeah.
I'm for that.
We get 5 million downloads. First episode. We're done. You know, we're all millionaires. That's how it works. I know, because I'm a business giant.
Yeah.
You're a business person. Yes.
I didn't even know what to say after business. I'm a business giant. What is that? I don't know, but I'm sticking with it. It's my new title. Oh my God. Okay. So we're here. We're here with E.M. Carroll. We're making jokes about spooky season, but really, spooky season does live in our hearts. And I feel like, especially for horror creators, how lucky am I to be in the presence of two amazing horror creators? You kind of have to keep that, I don't know, spooky vibe alive inside of yourself. Now, comics is like one of my favorite media, if you will, for horror. And I'm curious for you, Em, what are the elements that you're generally, when you think about your horror comics, that you're, what elements are you trying to highlight or play with or juxtapose that make horror work so well in comics?
I was actually at a show this past weekend, and I was on a panel about horror comics, and this did come up. What is the best sort of use of the medium for horror? Why does it lend itself so well? And I can't say that I necessarily was drawn to making comics because I felt like it was a good medium for horror. It's just that, like, I wanted to make horror stuff, and comics are easy to make by yourself. Whereas, like, you know, like, a movie would be much more difficult, right? Totally. So I think like once I decided this is something I want to do by myself and it's going to be comics, then I had to try and figure out within the realm of that what worked well rather than kind of going the other way around, if that makes sense. One of the things I had been talking about was one thing that a comic has going for it in regards to horror that, you know, a movie doesn't, I guess a novel maybe sort of does, is that a book, if you have the physical book, it's like an object. And I do like the idea of like objects with cursed vibes or like bad vibes. Like my wife, when she read Beautiful Darkness, do you know that book, the French comic?
No, but I'm putting it on my list.
Yeah, it's a queasy one, but it's really good. But she was like, I don't want this book like in the house. Like she just had like such a bad vibe to it. So when people tell me that they have like a similar relation to any of my books or like, you know, they face it like spine in or something like that, that's always like high praise to me because that's how I treated scary books when I was younger. But yeah, otherwise, like I just like doing comics horror just because I like to draw. And so it kind of dovetails into that. And really, you can draw pretty much anything. You're not reliant on a budget or even necessarily the reader's imagination in all cases. And so I really like getting into the weeds with drawing and kind of pushing my skills and figuring out the limits of it and where I can take it.
I feel like there's so many follow-up questions and so many directions. I'm like, okay, do I want to talk about, I want to talk about a little bit the idea that you knew you wanted to write horror and comics became the medium through which to express that. Because I guess in my mind, I almost thought it would go the opposite way. I think for a lot of comic creators, it does. Like they're creating comics and then they sort of find the genre or voice or form that works best for them. So I'm curious for you, were you always just like a little creepy little kid? Like, are you just a creep? Like, you like spooky season and like it just felt right? Like, I'm just so curious.
Were you always a creep? holding my feet to the fire. Yes, I was.
I promised no hard hitting questions and then yeah, I just went for it.
growing up, it was always like, we were like a horror family, sort of. Not so much my mom, but like, I have an older brother. He's 4 years older than me. And him and my dad would bond by watching horror movies and then to like, you know, hang out and bond with them, I wouldn't want to watch horror movies too. And my dad was like really permissive with letting us watch horror movies, read horror books, like whatever. And so I watched a lot of really scary stuff when I was a kid, but, you know, it mostly just sort of washed over me. Like I couldn't, you know, I think I saw like Silence of the Lambs or something really young, but like it didn't mean anything to me. And the things that did scare me were things you couldn't necessarily like expect or like protect for. Like I would be scared by Pee-wee's Big Adventure like way more than I would be than, you know, Alien or Aliens or whatever. I got scared by like Dr. Seuss stories and like things like this. So like it was always just like you know, you can never really count for what's gonna scare a kid and what's not. And I never had like nightmares or anything based off watching scary movies. I had nightmares like unrelatedly, but like they weren't correlated to scary movies. So yeah, so growing up, it was like that kind of horror bonding experience. My dad and my brother also used to make like homemade horror movies too. So I would like star in a couple of those like when I was like, you know, six. And that was fun. Like we'd do all the effects and blah blah blah. And then so like growing up, that was just always what I liked. And you know, I was 13 once. I read a bunch of Stephen King. I still read Stephen King, but like that was like my most in-depth Stephen King period. So like I always just liked that, but like I never felt like it was something that I was going to really break into or do myself as much as I wanted to. I just didn't see the path for me into that realm necessarily. I think I initially wanted to go into film and then I would possibly work in horror, but that did not pan out. So I think once I started deciding that I want to make comics, I was like, I want to make horror comics specifically.
Thank you for turning my like kind of unintentionally rude question into like a really nice story.
No, not at all.
Why are you such a fucking creep? You're like one of my favorite creators. And I'm just like yelling at you. Oh, ADHD, you bitch. Okay. No, I mean, that actually really touches me. It sounds kind of magical in a way to have that experience with your dad and brother of this sort of horror making from like a very young age.
Yeah, no, I am really grateful for it. And like, again, like mileage varies from kid to kid, right? Like I have two nephews. The older one, who's like 12, has always hated horror. He hates any scary stuff. He just really dislikes it. And yet his brother, who's 4 years younger than him, loves scary stuff and always has. And like, you know, you talk about having skeletons when he was like 5. He asked for a skeleton for his birthday. He like sleeps with the skeleton. He draws me Slenderman fan art and like Trevor Henderson characters and all this kind of stuff. Like he is so into it. And so like some kids just can bounce back from horror easily and some can't. And I guess you don't really know. So like, I'm always quite, you know, when people ask me, is this appropriate for whatever age, blah, blah, blah. You know, I don't know. I don't have kids. I was a little horror kid, so I could take it, but like, you know your kid better than I, so I have no idea. But like anything I make, I think would be fine for a certain type of kid. It would have been fine for me, I guess. A little creep.
You heard it here first, folks. If your kid's a little creep, yeah, you got to pick up the whole E.M. Carroll work.
And, you know, just co-signing with the horror. So I'm a horror filmmaker. And horror has always been a part of my life. I've always loved watching horror movies ever since I was a little kid. But I've always been very attracted to the aesthetics of horror, primarily mm-hmm. because I like doing like SFX and like all that stuff. And one thing that stands out about your work are the ways that you use color and how you translate that into, you know, like a horror like setting or horror aesthetic. And what it reminded me of was about like giallo films. Are you familiar with like, you know, old school giallo, like Dario Argento, like lots of like bright colors, bright reds, but also muted like shadows and things like that. And I'm just curious, like if you have a particular formula for any of your comics when it comes to like color theory. It's a very nerdy question, but just color theory or like setting up your world by utilizing any type of like palette to infer that this is like your own personal like nightmarish world that you're going to be executing the story in.
That's a great question. I actually I had seen giallo again when I was like a kid. I probably watched a bunch of them. But only this past year did I start watching them more, specifically because of like the look. And I had just never gotten into them before. So I watched like a bunch of Argento movies. And I love, in addition to like the color you mentioned, like also just like the design and like the artifice of certain like locations and just environments. I think that's why I started watching them, is that I wanted to like soak in more stuff with like really thoughtful contrived environments, I guess. But yeah, when it comes to like my own stuff, my wife always makes fun of me because I just make everything red. I recently took some test online where like you test your blues and greens, like which ones you see. And I feel like I'm more sensitive to greens. So usually when I color something, I usually make it too green. So I think I put a red cast on it to kind of like correct, but then it just all goes like really red. But yeah, I think I like bright colors. It takes a long time for me to figure out the palette. And I usually do that through trial and error in, you know, Clip Studio or Photoshop or whatever I like. I think certain color palettes, like in Guest in the House, there's a night that's sort of like this greeny blue with pink highlights. And that was because I accidentally clicked a layer mode on in Photoshop, which turned him like pink. And I was like, oh, that actually looks pretty cool. So a lot of my coloring is not necessarily like this grand design that I have. It's just like accidents and just playing around with like, well, let's put like this color on and then like try out this layer mode. Because like it requires a lot of trial and error for me to figure out if the colors look right. And what counts as looking right versus not looking right is, you know, just sort of one of those instinctual gut level things. But certainly I have like, you know, folders of, you know, screenshots or inspiration that sort of like, you know, I want to go for this type of super saturated against desaturated or whatever, you know, reference. But yeah, no, it is, I like using color as a way to kind of like punch things up or like highlight. I guess that's, you know, how people generally do. And I do often go for red because, of course, it's horror and I am partial to red.
Absolutely. And I also just have a question. Are you into like horror anime at all, or are you into anime like in general?
Yeah, actually, it's funny you mentioned that because earlier, before we got started with SE, I had to mute what I was listening to like, you know, calm down, get in the zone. I was listening to the Berserk soundtrack.
Oh, my goodness.
I was listening to Guts's theme.
And I was like, Monica is going to be so excited that you like anime. And then here you are, Monica, just serving it up.
Yo, Berserk is wild. One of my good friends actually introduced me to that, I want to say like 2 years ago, like showed me like the anime. And I was like, my jaw like dropped. I was like, what is this? And I was like absolutely in love. But like horror anime like Vampire Hunter D or anything like that, like
I have not watched that. I do watch anime. I think I watched it a bunch in high school and then I kind of fell off for a while. In the past few years I've been getting more into it, but I'm like really behind on like the classics, and especially classics in horror anime. Like I watched like Chainsaw Man. And I also read a lot of the manga. And what else? I started watching Dandadan that just came out. But yeah, I have not watched Vampire Hunter D, but somebody just recently recommended that to me too.
I think you'll really appreciate like the colors and the style. And that actually leads into my next question. Are you influenced by any type of like manga, like when it comes to illustration or your drawing style?
Oh, 1000%. Yeah, for sure. Again, going back to like high school, what got me more into like comics, or not even got me more into comics, is I've always read comics, but like not necessarily like good ones. Like when I was a kid, I would just read like Archie comics, right? You buy like the double digest and it's like you're reading stories from like the 40s or whatever, along with stuff from the 80s and 90s. So I would just read whatever was comics. I'd read all the newspaper comics, whatever. And then in high school, I think I went to the first week, or I went to anime club because I wanted to watch Ghost in the Shell, and then the next week they had the second or first Ranma 1/2 movie, and then I loved that so much, bizarrely, because those movies aren't great, but I got into the manga from that, and then from that I just got into manga in general. So like I think Rumiko Takahashi was like the first person who really showed me like how funny comics can be and how like incredible cartooning can be, and creating this whole world and like a wide cast of characters. And then moving on from that, I did see Berserk in high school on like some bootleg VHS that my friend gave me, and it completely like destroyed my mental health for like 2 weeks after it ended.
No. I could not stop thinking about it. Like I was like, I have no idea, but somehow I'm intrigued yet traumatized from this.
Well, it ends with such a bummer. It's just like the anime ends at the worst possible point. I just rewatched it recently with my wife and she's like, that's literally where they leave it. I'm like, yes. And like as a teenager, I like didn't know what this was. I had to like, you know, I just wanted to find out that everyone was okay. And of course, you know, they're not, but maybe eventually. But yeah, so that would be the other major influence on me now is Berserk. You know, they started coming out with those huge omnibus editions, so you can see the artwork more fully than the old volumes. He's a huge influence on me now. And I mean, he's been an influence on so many people. So like, I also really got into like the Souls games, and he's a huge influence on that. And then they're a huge influence on me. So I keep joking that like, I've chosen like my 40s to really pivot into getting like hatching a lot and drawing more like my era, which is a bad idea. I think he is a major influence on me in terms of, I would love to create something with a story on even a fraction of that level, but just the artwork, the monster design, the like attention to detail and environments, I think is incredible. And other big ones, Junji Ito, obviously, I have a whole bunch of his work. I think probably he's the one who inspired me to do like a lot of short stories, like, you know, get in and out. You don't need to explain everything. Just like, here's a cool idea. Well, bye. So I really appreciate that.
Just little blasts.
Yeah. And then, yeah, like I think I'm literally just looking around my room at like what manga is like falling off my chair and stuff like this. I think also like reading like shoujo manga from like the 70s. I was into reading a lot of Muro Hajio for a while. And just like those the way you can put like page spreads together and, you know, manipulate paneling and just make something beautiful. Like the whole page like is like one piece that just sort of like flows together and is beautiful. So I think that was also a big influence on me.
I just finished reading The Heart of Thomas for a class.
Oh, yeah.
That is an interesting one. I definitely see where Oscar Wilde shows up some situations, but that is definitely growing up, like I was definitely on fanfiction.net, like before there was Archive of Our Own Kids, there was fanfiction.net. This was the wild, wild west of the internet. And there was just like a lot of unbridled, like, you know, fan fiction that would either be like yaoi or, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. And I just think it's so fascinating that like as far as manga is concerned, it's just like worlds away from a lot of like Western comics and the idea of like exploring anything that is probably not heteronormative. And I feel like horror in general like is also a safe space where we can explore more experiences of like people versus like, you know, superhero comics or whatever else.
Sure. Yeah.
Going into when I arrived at the castle, when I first read it, like, I definitely got, like, the vibe that, like, you were totally into horror and anime. I was like, this is it. This is it. Like, and I just want to commend you on that.
Thank you. That one was sort of a weird one because if I can just go into talking about when I arrived at the castle a little bit.
We love a segue and we love it when you do it for us. So please carry on.
I'm trying to think now of like my influences in starting it, and certainly it was influenced by like that sort of those sort of like sweeping pages, kind of more open layouts. And that comic in particular, I have a hard time placing exactly where it came from because I started drawing it when I was extremely depressed, and I was burnt out on comics, and I thought I'm just going to start drawing something. So that comic, the first 10 pages of it were just sort of made one after the other. Like, I did not know what it was going to be about. I didn't know who these characters were or what was happening. It sort of morphed as I drew it so that I could kind of like think ahead where I was going with it. But it was sort of a very intuitive thing where I just wanted to like get in touch with having fun making comics again and just sort of like following my instincts and what brings me the most pleasure to, you know, draw. And it's, you know, costumes and vampire ladies and, you know, Baroque flower ornaments. So that kind of had like a weird circuitous development, I guess, if you could even call that. And I initially wasn't planning on publishing it anywhere. It was literally just for me to, you know, hang in there. I had to just draw more of this comic every day. So I had a direction to go.
I am obsessed with the idea of when I arrived at the castle being your lifeboat.
It truly was, honestly.
I can see why. Like, it's deeply passionate. It's, like, filled with those melancholic feelings. It is, you know, it's dripping with purpose, too. Like, I can see how it does those things. It's just, it's so macabre to be your lifeboat. But this is why I love horror creators. Like, we're all like, no, that's my special murder guy. Like, he's really special to me. That's my favorite murderer. What's the problem? I love it. It's so beautiful. So I read an interview, and I wish I had remembered where from. I left my tablet in the other room. And it was about Through the Woods. And you were talking about your process there and how you worked simultaneously on script and thumbnails, mm-hmm. and then you would start to draw and then, you know, refine the script from there. This sounds like a departure process-wise. And it sounds like part of that was just what was needed from you as an artist in that moment. But I'm curious, do you now do the other process again? Is this, how do you make comics now? And how has that changed or not because of when I arrived at the castle?
It's more or less the same. Like, I think they're just different versions of the same process. So when I arrived at the castle, yeah, I would just do it like, I will do a whole page and then I will do a whole page and then I'll do a whole page. Later on in it, Once I sort of got a feel for it and where it was going, I did sort of plan ahead, like I say. I am not a totally orderly creator. It's funny, I keep mentioning that I was at the Prairie Comics Festival in Winnipeg last week. And the other guest there with me was Faith Hicks. And she has like a very streamlined approach. She's very orderly. She does script, thumbs, you know, whatever, roughs. And I felt like so chaotic in comparison, because I often do thumbnails, but I don't always do. I think I will start off with them, but I usually like just going into, you know, Clip or whatever, and just starting the drawing and starting what it's going to look like. You know, this is where I will like figure out like the palette, and because that will inform, you know, what it looks like or what I want to highlight. And so it is like a very like intuitive process. Even my thumbnails will mostly just be me placing out, you know, maybe where I want panels to go, and then like story beats, or like, you know, put something here that's scary or whatever will be the note, right, on this like 1-inch by 1-inch drawing. But I don't plan out too far ahead. I did experiment briefly after I finished Guest in the House, which does have a lot of scripted scenes, so that I just like wrote in a notepad. But I decided to try doing like, I will do a script, then I will do thumbnails, then I will do pencils, and then I will pencil the whole thing, and then I will ink and color the whole thing. It'll be so streamlined. I'll get so much done, was the theory. But in that case, by the time I finished the pencils, I was just like, I'm so bored of this comic and I don't want to do it anymore. So I have a bunch of short stories that have been penciled out and written, but like, it just sort of killed the process for me. Like, I just want to like go in and start, you know, getting my hands dirty, as it were, and figuring out what's going to go where. And that will usually, while I'm doing that, because that, you know, is laborious and takes a long time, the rest of the story will congeal in my head. Like, I'll probably have like the bones of it, like what happens at the end, what happens in the middle, like this happens. But the particulars of that will come up in me actually drawing like what essentially could become final art.
You know, I'm oddly comforted to hear about your own creative chaos, as it were.
Yeah.
I find that like that's the case for me when I'm doing fiction as well. Is like, I mean, I don't know. Like, sometimes I have a lot of clear ideas going into it, and then I start writing and I'm like, well, none of those matter now, because like, yeah, it headed in a different direction. And so now I have to do that same work again, or what have you. And then some ideas come together, like they just snap and you're like, oh, easy. I wish they were all like that, frankly.
Yeah, but yeah.
They're not, from my experience. They are decidedly not. It's neat to hear about your process, I think, because honestly, it all feels so polished and purposeful on the back end, if you will, where I get to read it. It's nice to hear about how it's more like maybe quilting or sewing or something than like, you know, perfect dictation that you're just like walking around your house and then this perfect thing happens. And this, yeah. I don't know, you're human, and I guess I find some comfort in that.
I find some comfort in the fact that it comes together at all. So that's good.
That's magic. I mean, there is some magic to it, right? You know, just for listeners, I'll mention now so I don't forget. When I Arrived at the Castle was one of our comics of the week. It was actually for episode 82, which is a stacked queer cast. Don't worry if you didn't catch that. I will link to it in the show notes, but we have been huge fans of When I Arrived at the Castle for a long time. And you know, that was when the original printing had come out, but there wasn't the new printing. And so we're actually today talking about the new printing, which is the second printing, right?
Mm-hmm.
From Silver Sprocket, which is, obviously we talked off air beforehand that Silver Sprocket feels like the perfect place for this to land now and be given this next printing. Also because the cover, like Monica mentioned at the beginning of the episode, is really, really cool. The foil accenting on the letters is so perfect. You know, it gives it that like elevated gothic feel where it almost feels like it would be, velvet. Velvet's the word I was looking for. It feels, you know, like, which is what I feel like the vampire lady would have in her castle. Lots of velvet, sure, you know, that's red. And so it really is nice that way. It's good to see. It's nice to see Silver Sprocket give it such a beautiful cover.
Oh,
I'm curious for you, how did it feel to have a new printing in your hands? And I also know that in the more recent editions, the name has been updated. And I'm curious, have you gotten your byline updated? Have you gotten a copy with the update on it yet?
I will have to check. I have not been paying attention. I don't know. I probably have.
Relatable.
I think I probably have. But I lose track. Yeah. So like it was originally printed in 2019 from Koyama Press. That was their final year of publishing books. I was so grateful to get in because I love Annie Koyama and she published great books. And she was so lovely to publish this for me. And like I say, I was not anticipating it actually coming out. Anyway, but when they went out of print, she was like, you should find other places for everyone's books. And I was like, oh, well, Silver Sprocket would be perfect if they, reprint books. And fortunately, they do. So they were really lovely. They were really excited about it. They did an amazing job on the cover. Like they added like these nice flaps. So I did like the book itself is all the same content wise, but I did some extra drawings for these French flaps on there. And then I did extra drawings for the front and back cover, which was just like fun to go back and redo because the characters are very fun to draw. And I think the sketch that I did for the cover, normally when people ask, to send in cover designs, they're like, send us a bunch of ideas and you send in however many. This one, I drew this one version and I was like, can I do this? Because I had so much fun drawing that image that ended up being the final image. And then from there, they were like, oh, cool. We're going to put like a foil on, the blood and this, and this is going to be matte. Like they really care about that. And I appreciated it. So yeah, no, it's a beautiful addition. And yeah, I think the first printing of it, because it came out in May, the first printing of it has my old name on it. This one will have E.M. Carroll on it. I don't really mind. Again, at this show I had recently, people were asking if, I can cross it out or something on the cover. And I'm like, oh, it's a nice cover. I don't want to draw on it. it's coming out with just my initials. And or it has been out now because I know people were asking for it, and I'm super happy, and the response to it has been really amazing. I'm just glad that like it got republished so more people can see this fat girl vampire book I made.
And that leads up to my next question.
You love Bitches on Comics, huh? You want to see us succeed and find many listeners and be happy little bugs? Well, then take a moment to rate and review us on your favorite podcast platform. Don't worry, we'll wait. No, really, go do it right now. Did you do it? Of course you did. We appreciate you taking the time to give us 5 stars and tell everyone how great we are.
Just didn't think it was ever going to get published thing, so
got it.
When I first drew the first page, and the first page I think I drew is not the like when I arrived at the castle line, I had to add that after so that there was some kind of sense. I think it's like the second page then, where the vampire is like leaning down, she's just come out of the bath or something, and so I drew her, and then I was drawing the person visiting. And I was, drawing all these faces and figuring her out. And I have a thing where I sometimes can't take my drawings seriously as actual characters. I don't have this issue with anybody else's comics. But for some reason, when I'm like designing characters and making them look like actual people, the closer they come to looking like actual people, the less seriously I take them, because it's like a sort of uncanny valley of like, well, I know you're a drawing, like you're a cartoon. Like, I can't believe your eye. Like, it's always eyes. Eyes are always so difficult for me. Character design is difficult for me. So I was like, you know what? I'm just going to give her a kitty cat face. It's, whatever. And I've always drawn like cat people or whatever. So yeah, so I just gave her a cat face basically to be like, I don't care. I don't want to get bogged down in designing somebody and, have her be distractingly cartoon human. So I was like, I'm just going to make her a cat so I can move on with it. And then from there, it just sort of meandered.
Became extremely integral to the entire story.
Yeah, well, exactly. That's what I'm saying. Like, I just sort of like felt it out as I was going. And it just gave me the leeway to get into that, the rest of the story.
When I remember loving it so much the first time I read it, and then I was like completely confident that I remembered everything and, you know, set up our interview, reread it and was like, oh, there's like this huge, huge twist at the end that I completely forgot about. And I think it's partially because it's such a quick-paced book. Mm-hmm. Like the pacing is so, well, quick is not the right word. The pacing's so, I would say, driving. And you're, you know, you're sort of alongside the cat girlfriend who we all love, you know, being dragged down hallways by a sexy vampire who we all love. Like there's, it's like nothing but wins in this book, which is so, such a funny way to describe a book that's so macabre. But I feel like I would love to be crushed by either of these women. This seems wonderful. They're both incredibly cool and attractive. Is it weird that I'm attracted to a cat lady? That one's not on me. That one's on you, okay?
That's, I'll take it, yeah. Nothing wrong with that.
Part of what gives it that pacing for me, that sort of driving, moving forward page to page, is obviously your exceptional work, you know, using that page turn that's so beautiful in comics that can do what like not quite any other medium can, and that like, whoa. But also the way that you use like non-panel panels, and the image I always come back to when I think of this specifically is the checkered hallway that they are walking down toward the beginning of the book, that then as they move across, it starts dripping down the page, mm-hmm. like blood, like paint, like everything's scary, like nice and creepy. Yeah, like raspberry jam, the creepiest of foods. And it's just this way that everything becomes part of the panel creation. Like anything can create the divide between what's happening in one panel to the next. And I'm curious for you, you know, and you're obviously not the only person to use like the non-panel panels. If those have a name, just feel free to tell me. Like, I don't know. Okay, great. We all will just call them non-panel. You know what, Monica, when you go to school and you're in your next graphic novel class, I want you to inquire. I'm just kidding. I'm not giving you homework. You're an adult.
I think it's in the Scout McCloud book. Just kidding. It's not. That book is probably... That book is problematic. But anyway, continue.
Monica, you're perfect. So, for you, like, is that part of the discovery of finding the story? I also saw it in A Guest in the House, too, some of these non-panel panels. But what are those doing for you? And, you know, I it's weird to ask why someone draws something, but I'm just like, tell me everything. Like, I want to know anything about these you want to know.
Okay. I guess... What I would call them is I think I just call them panels. For me, if there's like an image that is telling some part of the story, I call it a panel.
I like
even it. If it's not in an actual panel. My mom recently, her book club was reading Ducks by Kate Beaton, and she was asking me these questions, like if I have because I have Comics Insider or whatever, and she was like, she's like, so Kate Beaton uses a lot of these cells. She'll have many cells per page. And I was like, what? But that's what she calls panels. So she calls them cells. kind of like that idea too. I've had also people who don't read comics tell me that they call them just boxes. But I think of them as panels, like anything, like again, anything that has like any storytelling aspect to it. I think it's just more fun for me to kind of sort out how I can potentially make like a harmonious image out of the whole page. And again, that's probably like from like, you know, the 70s manga where you have, Kim Wang, she did a panel at TCAF like 10 years ago that really informed how I think about it. She was doing a panel on layouts in shoujo. So she would break down like, you know, how the distances between panels are not arbitrary. They have their own, you know, logic to them. Like if you want to like, basically how she laid out pages when she was breaking down these pages, we're talking about almost like beats, like it's like a, like there's a rhythm to a page. And I think that's still how I kind of look at a page, that like, you know, I look at it in terms of like rhythm or beats. Again, this is not like a science, clearly. This is just like my own vibes-based take on things. But I generally, like I say, work intuitively and kind of pace it out like that. So like I like doing a lot of double page spreads and things like that, that will, or like single, you know, splash pages or something. You can't really control for how quickly or slowly a reader reads a comic, but you can kind of throw up a few roadblocks in terms of like detailing or lots of panels and stuff. And then it does make it more fun when you do break out like a bunch of panels and make like a page full of boxes. But I think like for me, it's just whatever serves the mood or like the atmosphere of the story the most that informs how I approach the layout. It was a bit of a ramble, but
no, I loved it. Vibes. I loved it. I think vibes is a great answer. I love it. Well, and I mean, it was nice hearing about Wong talking about her layout at that panel that you were at. That's neat. I you know, comics are such a special language, and you know, I love Monica's joke about McCloud, of course. But you know, there's so much more. I think sometimes it's easy to be like, oh, it's pictures and words, and everyone's like, yes, I get it. It's like. And like so much more.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. Like, again, to go back to my mom's book club. So she was also asking me, because again, like the people at her book club, you know, they haven't read comics. So I think people forget that, you know, comics literacy is a thing. I have another friend who's in her 60s and she never really read comics. So I'll give her one of my books because she asks. I'm not just making her read this. But she can't read them because she gets too bogged down in reading the words or looking at the art first. So like my mom's book club, she asked me, what are we supposed to read first? Are we supposed to read the words? Or are we supposed to look at the art? Or are we supposed to look at the art and then read the words? And I was like, that is a great question that has never occurred to me. I think I said, because I look at them all simultaneously. And I think sometimes people who are new to comics can get bogged down and like they feel like they have to like really pore over the art in each panel without realizing that it's like sort of designed and the way it should work is you don't need to do that. Like, it's very nice of you to be respectful of the artist's time that went into drawing that lamp in the background or whatever, but you don't need to do that. That's part of the game. You can just, you know, move on, take it in and move on. You don't need to see every single detail, because one of the great things about comics, or one of the problems, you know, depending on the story you're telling, is that it is quite easy to look back and check something that happened earlier in the comic or earlier, you know, to flip the page back and just double check, you know, what that character had in their hand, if anything. And at least for my books, at least like in Guest in the House, I did have copy editors go through to make sure that things, like in film, like where you're like trying to like match cuts of people like putting cups down or whatever, to make sure that everyone was still had all the same like props and items around. So yeah, you can go back and like, you know, and check, but I don't even remember the point I was trying to make.
Well, I am fascinated. I am fascinated by the question from your mom's book club of like, do I read the words or look at the images first? Yeah. That had never occurred to me either.
That actually reminds me of like the controversy that happened with Alan Moore when Watchmen was a thing. Like, he would literally just like put like a whole block of prose in the book. And people were just like, what the hell is this? Is this a novel? Is this a comic? Because just like, when people think of comics, it's definitely like coming from, you know, like the quote unquote golden age of comics, where it's just like superheroes and like the comics code, blah, 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 blah. So just like moving into like this direction where artistic experimentation and comics can meet was such a revolutionary thing that I think it also just spawned a movement of where anybody who had an idea and had a pen could be like, I can make this into my own world. And I feel like that's, you're doing world building, essentially. It's just like writing a game or something like that. Like, there is a definitive discipline to creating comics. And, you know, there's always like that argument of like, what makes a graphic novel? What makes a comic? Do you differentiate between those two? Would you call yourself a novelist?
Or? No. No. I would love to, but no. I think I'd feel like stolen valor. I think I don't differentiate. What I would call a graphic novel is anything that's like, you know, over, I don't know, 100 pages, maybe. I guess I would call that a graphic novel, but I'd also call it a comic. So I call all my comics comics. But since a comic could be like, you know, a single Far Side comic, or it could be, you know, the entirety of Berserk, I do sort of differentiate between that. I know, like, to go back to my mom's book club, they definitely use graphic novel in a way that it's like, you know, this is I think it comes with like a sort of like a highbrow kind of like quality to it. Like, this is it's serious.
Elevated.
Yeah. Like I sort of like that kind of rubs me the wrong way. So
I hate that.
I tend not to do it myself. I think of them as sort of the same thing, especially since like a lot of my comics have been short comics. Like I would say my only graphic novel is A Guest in the House, just because it's long and all one story. But that's it.
I love that, you know, we're like talking about panels, but that's also like an entree to talk about people who read comics who aren't comic readers. I don't know if that makes sense. Like, I think it's great. I'm so excited that your mom's in a book club that's reading comics. I think that's really cool.
Oh, my mom's a big fan. She'll read my stuff.
Which
I have to bear in mind. I mean, I can't. You can't bear it in mind past a certain point. But she's very excited. This is, again, I don't have kids, so this is like proof of my existence. I got books published. So
LOL, stop it. Oh my God. We're all living the same life. Oh my God. It's like, I don't have children, but I have these hobbies.
I have this career. It's like something that my mom, when her friends ask her like what I'm doing, she can like point to a thing.
Yep.
Oh my God.
I think she actually at a different one of her book clubs, I think they did read my book, but I did not. She was like, you could be a guest. And I was like, could be. I was like, I'm not going to be involved. She's very respectful of the fact that I don't like, you know, explaining my comics for people or like, you know, answering everyone's like particular questions on like what's real and what's not or whatever.
Absolutely.
And so,
on that note, could you just tell me real quick what's just kidding?
Yeah. But like, so like that's, so she's a big fan of that. So she has read all my comics. She's very sweet in that regard. She has two book clubs. One is like the one where they all, you know, don't really talk about the book and drink wine and whatever. And the other one is like really serious. And the Ducks was being read with a really serious one where they go through like questions and have like deep discussions on the book. So.
Oh my God. I love that.
Oh my God. I can't wait to start my own big book club. Like I don't drink, but it'll just be a book club for potheads.
Yeah.
I would join that, Monica.
Thank you. Cool. 2025. Here we go.
I'm not sure I will have much to contribute given the nature of the. I'll just be like talking about spaceships. Everyone's like, this is not science fiction. I'm like, well, I thought of it. I'm sorry. Now we all have to talk about spaceships.
Well, that's what I was going to say. Is graphic novels for like people who don't read comics or like, you know, are book club ladies or whatever. They're. Entry, I think, is like a memoir comic, like Ducks or something like that.
Yeah.
That they can kind of get into like a nonfiction comic to make that entrance. But yeah, like I say, I have another friend who like just gets overwhelmed by the art. She cannot like, she cannot take it. Do either of you know the comic Wendy by Walter Scott?
No.
It's published, I think, now. Well, it was published by D&Q. I can't remember. Anyway, it's a really funny comic, but like the character is drawn with like these like giant empty eyes sometimes. Like she looks like the Scream. And this friend of mine could not read it because she was like so scared of the image. They're not scary comics. They're really funny. But like she would just get so overwhelmed by images. And so like especially with like any horror comics, like my stuff, she could not read it because the image would stay with her too much.
Man, that's why I like horror comics.
I know.
So I just think about in A Guest in the House, when it's that pink roiling mass of flesh.
Oh, sure.
Just behind the night. I think about that all the fucking time. I just think about it. This dovetails with something else you were saying about comics giving you the ability to do something that, you know, novels can't quite do, maybe film can do, but to create something, not even film because of budgets typically, but to create something truly horrifying beyond the reader's imagination. And I think sometimes, like, I'm a pretty visual person, but sometimes when I'm reading books and someone tries to pull off something Lovecraftian where they're like, it's just so unimaginably horrific. I'm like, well, I'm not picturing anything. Like, I'm not picturing anything. And so it's not as scary. But then I go over to your book, I go over to Guest in the House, and I'm like, oh, that's what they want me to picture. So maybe I'll be better at reading those books now because I'll just picture your creepy shit as part of it.
Well, like, that's the thing. Yeah, like Stephen King's talked about this too, like, where in... Yeah, in books or radio, as what he was writing this in the early 80s, you can just say like, yeah, and on the other side of the door is the most horrific thing you've ever seen. Or like, I think his example is like the hugest cockroach you've ever seen. And that leaves it up to the listener to be like, oh, like what constitutes a huge cockroach for them versus in film, you actually have to show that cockroach. So you run the risk of the viewer being like, oh, I guess that's a big cockroach, right? Like maybe they were imagining bigger or it becomes silly or whatever. And so in comics, you don't have to have like an effects budget or something like that. You can draw what you want, but you do still run the same thing if it's not scary enough, especially because you're only using like, I was saying to somebody a while ago that like, you know, there's the comic you want to make and then, or the drawing you want to make, and then there's the comic your stupid hands make. Cause like, you know, I'm only at the limit of what my hands can do, what my skill can do. So like what constitutes a scary image, again, mileage varies amongst people, but that's definitely something I want to push myself with more, probably inspired by Berserk in terms of creating something that's like really unsettling.
Unsettling is a great word for what you are achieving, I'll say. And I can't wait to see what else you come up with, of course. But I would say both in When I Arrived at the Castle and A Guest in the House, there are these just, yeah, truly grotesque moments that are really fun. And I mean, that's kind of messed up, I guess, in a way. But that is kind of your thing, is sort of bringing together maybe two things we'd think of as, you know, disparate. And the other one that always comes to mind for me when I'm thinking about your work is like sensual horror, where like at the moment of the most horrifying thing happening often, especially in these two stories at least, like there's something extremely sexy and queer going on too. And so you're like, this is really fucked up and so hot. And I love it. Like, talk to me about sensual horror. Talk to me about what you like to do with it. Maybe if there are other titles that like you like of other people's sensual horror, we can talk about that too. We can take it in any direction, but I just want to hear about it a little.
I just like the phrase, tell me of sensual horror.
That's my other podcast.
I think part of that kind of comes through with, I think you can really tell when somebody is having fun drawing something versus when they're not. Certainly I can tell with myself when I'm having a good time drawing something versus when I'm not. And I think so that aspect of like a pleasurable or sensual look, I think is because I'm also having like a satisfying time drawing it. Like I find the actual drawing very satisfying, not necessarily like sensual, but like, I think that that aspect comes through. And so I think that I do like a lot of body horror stuff, and that sort of like sensual, almost like cannibalistic aspect, which is in When I Arrived at the Castle. You know, I just find it that kind of stuff comforting to draw. Weirdly, I've always found like gore and, you know, rendering that kind of thing very satisfying. So like, you know, you mentioned the pink kind of meat stuff that is underneath the night in A Guest in the House. And like, that was very satisfying. Like it's a way I can sort of, I just sort of go into a zone and draw like gore stuff. I was actually on a tangent. I was really happy with that book that there's a page, maybe two pages that I had to cut out just for timing. And one of them we got to use on the inside cover. So on the hardcover of A Guest in the House, there is, if you take off the jacket, there's an image of the knight sort of burbling with the pink stuff. And that was a page in the book that I sort of retrofitted with the designer, Molly Johansson, to create this kind of like under the jacket look. So I was glad to still use that. But yeah, I think, I don't know, it's just like something, you know, body horror is sexy. I'm a big fan of Cronenberg, The Elder. Brandon's okay too. I think it's just what's personally is kind of satisfying for me to draw. Like I say, When I Arrived at the Castle was drawn as a way for me to, not to get too heavy, but like when I first started drawing that comic, I was drinking very heavily. I was extremely depressed. I had gone through a couple start stops on sobriety. And when I did stop drinking, I was like, well, I'm going to continue making this comic and I don't want to drink until I finish this comic. So it did sort of keep me, like you say, like a lifeboat, and kept me afloat during some sort of like a difficult time. And I think that's reflected in the comic. And just like, so all these things that I'm drawing are sort of my comfort drawings. Like they are therapeutic for me to draw. And so, yeah, I think that's where the sensual gore comes from.
I love that. Again, so meaty. There's so many directions to head. I'm like, okay, let's, and now back to your mom's book club.
Sure, of course.
Just kidding.
Ask me anything.
That's gonna, your mom's book club, the new title of the episode. Amazing. You know, something that, you know, we got to talk about guests in the house a little bit. Well, we might also bounce back to when I arrived at the castle. Sure. But, you know, a guest in the house is, it's like a haunted house, but gay. and like, which like a lot of haunted houses are gay, to be fair. Mm-hmm. I'm guessing the house and the story. I mean, I assume all the houses are gay. That's, I mean, they certainly look at a lot of other houses. What am I even saying? But, you know, I want to know about the origination of A Guest in the House a little bit. Like, where, what made you want to tell a haunted house story? Hmm. You know, why did you want to tackle it in this sort of setting? And why was Abby your character at the heart of it?
Well, so a few answers. Originally, it was from a dream. I had a dream about this woman who lived by the ocean, and she married a widower, and he had a daughter. And, you know, it's that classic sort of fairy tale where, like, you know, you find out you're married to like whatever sort of mythical creature, but that you can't tell anyone that you are. And as soon as you tell anyone, they disappear forever. And the husband and the daughter were like these creatures that had come out of the sea that were like these long white noodles. Okay. So that was the dream.
Okay. Long white noodle dream.
And
love
then
it.
I was like, that's sort of similar to stuff in The Nesting Place, which is a story in Through the Woods that, spoiler alert, there's like a woman who's full of these worms. So I was like, okay, I'm going to stay away from marrying into a worm puppet at well-trod ground. So I kind of put it on the back shelf. And in the meantime, I read Rebecca, and I did really like, I love Daphne du Maurier. And I did really like the idea of that book. Again, spoilers for a book that's like 100 years old. I did really like the idea of that this book is like, you know, it's, yeah, I thought it was going to be this big romance or whatever. And it's like, this guy who sucks is like, can't get over the fact that his hot bisexual wife was like so much cooler than him. And then he finds this sort of boring girl who gets haunted by this, you know, by the memory of her, the shadow she casts. And of course, Rebecca also has, you know, this lesbian overtones, especially the movie. I decided, you know, it'd be fun to have the sort of milquetoast new wife fall in love with the ghost of the cool, intimidating former wife. So that was another sort of building block aspect of it. I think it really came together. I read the book A Jest of God by Margaret Lawrence. And that's a book, I think it was made into a movie in the 60s by Paul Newman. But it's about a small town. She's a school teacher. And her interior life, she's, you know, very sheltered. She's 34. She's never had a relationship. She's a virgin, but she has like all these like really elaborate sexual fantasies that kind of bleed into her life. But she's like, you know, she has a rich fantasy life and this sort of like baseline kind of boring existence where she lives with her mother. And so I think that also influenced it. Other stuff like Shirley Jackson in general. But so all those things sort of came together. And then I came up with a story for it like pretty quickly in terms of like, you know, what was going to happen throughout it. I had a whole bunch of scenes laid out and then I just had to figure out how to like, you know, tie them all together. But I did want to make something that was, yeah, that sort of blend of fantasy and reality and an experiment in that sort of thing. Well, also like, this is a problem with a lot of my comics is that they're like therapeutic for me personally. So this one was no exception. So like I got to like, you know, work through a lot of things through Abby, who is not me. Abby's not me. But she is sort of I think I named her, I had a pen name when I was 13 that was Abby Davis. And I was like, I'm going to use that pen name as this character. And then I think she's sort of from a lineage of my characters where like, I think physically, she's another one where I couldn't take her design seriously. So I gave her dot eyes in order to take her seriously. And she also kind of looks like the protagonist from His Face All Red, this webcomic I did like 15 years ago. So, and I think they are sort of a piece, that they are sort of the same character in some way. So it's fitting that they look together, lookalike, but I didn't put that together right away. But so she was very much inspired by A Jest of God and the second Mrs. De Winter. But like, if she was like really self-hating and gay.
Self-hating and gay. Yeah. Too many yeah. counted among that number. Yeah, it's such a slow dread book. You get it from page one, right? Like something's wrong here. Like it's not right. And then that dread just like page to page builds. And then you're like, no, I know what's happening now. I figured it out. About halfway through, I'm like, I know what's happening. I'm pretty great at books. I'm pretty much a genius. Turning the pages, the dread is growing. No, I'm definitely correct. I know exactly what's happening. Turning the pages. Oh, okay. I didn't see that coming, but I did know, okay? I kind of knew. Okay, turn the page. Holy fucking shit! What the fuck? And that is like my favorite ending in horror is just like, you don't know anything, dummy, because nobody knows anything. That's life. The end. And that was just really delightful. I was obsessed. I'm so hesitant to talk about it too much because I think it's such an experience. And it's still so new. So I want people to like go and like have their own beautiful deep dive into A Guest in the House because it is, it's like the perfect month for it. Yeah. It's the perfect like, oh, you want to feel some dread and while looking at beautiful pictures. Oh, I got something for you. It's delightful.
Oh, I appreciate hearing that. Yeah.
Oh, I'm glad. Yeah. Good work.
Thank you.
I approve. I'm like, back to it. I want more comics. Just I mean, I do, but you're doing great.
Thank you.
Something that's shown up in your work that I am hugely appreciative of as a fat person is a lot of body diversity. And in fact, it feels like your lead characters are they fat? Are they curvy? Are they chubby? I don't know. They're human beings, but they have like, you know, Abby has cellulite on her butt and thighs that we see at one point. The cat woman in When I Robbed the Castle, there's like her belly folds over at one point and touches maybe like another part of her belly or her chubby thigh or what have you. And what stood out to me was that the people that at least ostensibly we are sort of led to view ourselves as being alongside are very human shaped. They have roundness to them, chubbiness, whatever, imperfections. And then the ghost, the lesbian vampire, they have these stunning tight waists, you know, perfect perky breasts, you know, and their hips are wide enough to like, oh, they've got that hourglass figure. They're just perfect. And then in each case, in one case, quite literally, that rips apart to then, you know, reveal a more grotesque, horrifying figure. Now, I've got the sense you're saying something about bodies and queerness and people, and you don't have to tell us exactly what it is, but if there's anything you want to share on that body diversity, cellulite, we're alongside the bigger bodies, there, you know, the creepy is also the very, very thin. I don't know. I think there's something very meaty there. Maybe I just like want to write an essay and I'm like, tell me what I should put in the essay.
I this is the thing, you know, the trouble with doing, you know, therapy to yourself via comics is that there's all this leakage in there and it can get embarrassing. But I actually don't really think I have the much body diversity in my comics. I think what I have is I often reflect my own body in them for a lot of the protagonists. I'm thinking also of the woman from did a webcomic called, I call it Hand Scream because it's about hand cream. Some other animals meet. It's on my site. It's free to read. She is sort of built like Abby. I think there's a few sequences in Some Other Animals Meet that were used to influence certain scenes in A Guest in the House. But yeah, no, I think it's me. I think I'm drawing myself. And that's another thing with When I Arrived at the Castle. When the cat girl shows up, she's this slim little thing. She doesn't really start having her body that she has for the rest of the comic until she takes a bath. She gets naked and takes a bath at a certain point. And at that point, I realized she was looking more like what my body looked at like at the time.
Oh my God, that is what happens. It does change at the... I didn't catch that! Oh, now I'm going to have to read it again.
Let me tell you, I did not catch it either. I did it. This is what I'm saying. Like, you know, there's a little leakage. So the other thing too is that like just like on a very basic level, like I really like drawing, you know, pinup-y looking hot ladies. Like I say, I read Archie as a kid. Why I read Archie the most is that I really liked Dan DiCarlo's comics because he drew the same lady with different hair. But like I loved how he drew Betty and Veronica and whatever. Because I just want to see pretty girls in comics. So like I think that kind of imprinted on my brain in terms of like how to draw pretty ladies. So there are like a number of characters in my comics who are these like almost like primordial pretty ladies, and almost all of them are filled with some kind of worms. Like there is a woman in The Nesting Place. The villain in that is a beautiful, beautiful lady who is filled with worms who have created her into being a beautiful lady. And then the vampire from When I Arrived at the Castle, the princess and Guest in the House, you know, they're all kind of like this sort of idealized thing. And I think in Guest in the House particularly, you know, Abby has this sort of lionized version of what being a woman means and being a beautiful woman based on, you know, watching her sister as she grew up and all this kind of stuff, which informs that character. But she herself is just like a normal human, so she doesn't look like a Dan DiCarlo drawing, you know what I mean? So like that, there is like that hyper real aspect of the quintessential, I don't know, hot lady. Hot lady
no,
villain.
For
I also
sure.
really love just hot lady villain characters. Like any hot lady villain, I am gonna be a huge fan. So like
if you want me to feel conflicted about a villain, make her a hot lesbian. I'm there. I'm conflicted.
Yeah, so like I'm big into that too. So.
Well, you know, that really struck me because I think what I was trying to sort of feel out and I'm going to take a leap and you neither have to confirm nor deny it. But what struck me when I was reading them is this way that the vampire, the ghost, they are projections. They are projections of the character we are alongside.
Yes.
And so when you said, you know, like they're this idealized femininity, I was like, yes, that totally makes sense to me. And it, again, is a particular, there's a particular queer juiciness to that that is, you know, about who we're attracted to, about what it says about how we conceive of ourselves, you know, all those pieces that, you know, sometimes aren't the most fun things to reflect on, but are important. And then, you know, there's this additional layer. And again, we don't even have time to crack this open, but where, you know, Abby pictures herself as knight, as masculine, as, you know, the body is lithe that Abby dreams of herself in, maybe themself in, I don't know. Mm-hmm. We'll see. I don't know if Abby gets a chance to explore her gender. Hey, we'll ask your mom's book club.
Yeah,
tell
we'll
us.
See what they think.
But it's just so, I don't know, it's just so rich. And I love the idea of not answering all the questions, right? And that's something horror lets us do. That's something that comics let us do. That's something that visual mediums in general let us do, that where you were like, here's a cool concept, bye. Yeah, like that same thing is there, but even meatier here. And, you know, I'm going to be sitting with it. I'm going to be thinking about it because I found both The Guest in the House and When I Arrived at the Castle just so breathtakingly beautiful, with so many important things to say, so many layers that, you know, I know I'm the one bringing that layer to it, you know, but it's there for me in a way that's really fruitful.
Yeah, that's part of it, right?
Yeah, that is part of it, right? It's an interactive process. Mm-hmm. It's like you and me both. But yeah, thank you so much for taking the time today. Thank you so much for, you know, these comics. Thank you to Silver Sprocket for sending us comps for review. We really, really appreciate it. And it's so cool to talk to you because I've been reading your work for so long. And I know I can speak for both Monica and myself, and then for our former host, Sarah Century, we are all just like absolutely huge, huge fans. So, you know, we're not done. We're closing down. But I just had to get a thank you in before I forgot. Because like, what if I'm like, I end the call and I'm like, bye. And then like, I'm like, oh no, I never said, I love your work. So I had to make time for it, I guess.
I would have been so insulted.
You'd be like, I'm never going back on that fucking podcast.
My word. I will say just one short thing on that topic of perception and these characters, like the princess character. I think Guest in the House is a large part about perception, how you perceive yourself, how you're perceived by others, how you want others to perceive you and perceive yourself. And it also ties into an earlier thing to do with comics and that you can flip back and forth. One of the things that I put in, I can't really talk about this without spoiling aspects of the comic, but there is a photo early on in the book of one of the characters, and it shows up again later in the comic during sort of a different type of sequence. And they are different, the two photos, even though they're ostensibly supposed to be the same photo. And that was supposed to, you know, reward a reader who did want to check back what the initial photo looked like. So that's just a tip. But the new photo is informed by who's talking about it and what they're talking about.
I'm like greedily rubbing my hands together like some kind of villain. I'm like, I'm going to go look at it right now, the second we get off this call.
Which is your favorite Shirley Jackson story? I know that you mentioned her.
Okay. So, well, I love Haunting of Hill House, obviously, but I really love The Sundial, like in terms of books. Mm-hmm. I think The Sundial's so fun. It'd be so fun to adapt. It has like a horror quality, but it's also like funny. But she also has a short story that I think was the basis for We've Always Lived in the Castle. It's a girl going, she's visiting her friend's family for summer break.
Is it the lottery?
No, it's like she's visiting her friend's family for summer break, and she just wanders through their big, beautiful estate and house.
I know what you're talking about.
I can't remember what it was. But anyway, that one, even though I can't remember the title of it, that one is one of my favorite stories. I've read that one a few times. But she just does such an easy way of writing. She just makes it look so, or made it look so effortless.
Mm.
But yeah, any of her books are fun. But yeah, I would love to. Adapting The Sundial, I think, would be really fun.
All right. How do we make that happen? If you're listening and you know, just let us know. We will put our great minds toward it. That sounds amazing. I would love that. So, Ian, are there any future projects that you can tell us about right now?
I don't think I can talk about them right now.
But they're out there. I love it.
I'm working on some stuff that is more... It's more horror stuff, and I think I'm really trying to push myself art-wise and really have fun. So I'm drawing a lot of things that I have a lot of fun drawing, which you can probably glean from what I've said in this podcast. Otherwise, I have a very short comic coming out in Come and Find Me, which is an anthology that Becky Clunan put together through Distillery. I believe it comes out at the end of this month. It's Becky Clunan, Hamlet Machine, Celine Liu, many like other people. It's just like, it's like a really beautiful horror anthology book that's like sort of folk horror based. And I did like a 4-page story in it that I had a lot of fun doing. So, and Becky's done an amazing job on it and she's incredible. So I would recommend people
she rules.
Check that out.
She rules. We had Becky on the podcast.
It was very cool. Great. Yeah.
We talked about Batgirls. It was very cool. She's lovely. Absolutely lovely. And where can people find you online if they want to learn more about you?
So I just have a website. It's all HTML. It's just emcarol. It's 2 R's and 2 L's.com. There's like a bunch of art on there. I update it every so often. It's usually right now Souls fan art and Berserk fan art. And a bunch of comics that I've done over the past like 10 years are all on there.
Yeah, a bunch. There are a bunch on your website.
Yeah, there's
most for free.
Yeah, right? Oh, they're all for free.
They're all for free.
Yeah,
okay,
there is
fantastic.
One that's a Bloodborne fan comic where you download the PDF, but it's free. You can download it for free.
Amazing, amazing. If you didn't have your pencil, listeners, if you don't have your pencil, don't worry. I will make sure and put that in the show notes. You like hit the 3 dots, or maybe there's a carrot that points down. I don't know. It should be next to the episode name. And we will have links to EM's website so you can check that out.
Oh, sorry. I'm also going to be at the Thought Bubble Festival in, not Leeds anymore, it's Harrogate in the UK next month, November, I think, 16th and 17th. And I'm doing a signing in London at Gosh Comics that Monday with Emma Rios, who's also an amazing cartoonist. So
amazing. You got ops to meet him. Come on, people. If you're in the UK, I'm going to be mad if you don't show up. No, I'm not. You're doing great. You're all doing great. Monica, as always, you are a goddamn delight. Sarah, we love you. Kate, thank you so much for making us sound good. I did not forget your name. I just forgot what I was saying. Priya, as always, thanks for all your great interviews over on the website. Listeners, you're the best, except maybe there's one group better than you. No offense, but it's our patrons. Thank you so much for giving us money. You are saints, and we appreciate you. What a great day. This is what I needed. I've been in the dumps, y'all, and I needed to talk about horror with just two of the coolest horror minds I know. So thank you. Thank you so much, Em, for taking the time for us, for making this happen. And I hope you will keep us in mind for future projects because we would love to have you back.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much. This has been really fun. I could have talked forever, honestly.
I know.
Thank you.
Next time I'll clear my schedule. We'll have 5 hours. Oh, so perfect. We can debrief your mom's book club some more.
Yeah,
you
can host it.
Please tell her we love her book club. All right, thanks, y'all.
All right. Bye. You're listening to Bitches on Comics, distributed by Realm, your portal to another world. Listen away. Find more shows like Bitches on Comics by following Realm on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or at realm.fm.
Bitches on Comics is a bi-weekly podcast where we talk to your favorite comics and pop culture creators and critics about what matters to them in comics and pop culture, as you might have guessed. You can follow us on Blue Sky, Instagram, and TikTok at Bitches on Comics. You can sign up for our newsletter, listen to any of our episodes, find curated lists of where to start listening, read interviews available nowhere else, and learn about our other projects and upcoming appearances at bitchesoncomics.com. If you'd like to support the podcast, you can do so by rating and reviewing us on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you listen to podcasts. You can also buy us a coffee or send us a one-time morale boost at ko-fi.com/queerspec. That's ko-fi.com/queerspec.
You can also support the podcast by joining us on Patreon. Head to our Patreon page at patreon.com/queerspec to learn more.
I'm Essie Fleenor, and you can learn more about me at essiefleenor.com. You can find me on Blue Sky at essiefleenor, the whole thing, and on Instagram at @essie_fleenor.
I'm Monica Estrella Negra, and you can find me at my website, Audrey's Revenge Film, listed below. Bitches on Comics is recorded by Kate Warner, who plays in the band Churchfire. You can find them at churchfiremusic.com. Our music is recorded by Katie Taylor, who plays as Earth Control Pill. You can find her music at earthcontrolpill.bandcamp.com.
If you like Bitches on Comics, you might also enjoy our narrative fiction podcast, Decoded Horror Channel, available wherever you get your podcasts or at decodedpride.com.
Be sure to check out our show notes to find a link to donate to campaigns engaged in important work.